Live from the Carter Subaru Studio, this is the Jason Rancho. If you want to join the conversation this Thursday evening, send us an email. Go to MyNorthwest.com, click on that Linwood Honda inbox, search for the name Jason Rancho. Of course, you can also like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/Jason Rancho. For some reason, Montel Williams is getting involved in the media attention that was paid to Marysville Pilchuck yesterday in the aftermath of that story that the school was evacuated due to a bomb threat. And yes, that Montel Williams, formerly of the Montel Williams Show. Marysville police said just before classes ended for the day yesterday, the school office, they received a call with a robotic message that threatened a bomb scare. They basically threatened that there was a bomb on campus. And so obviously the media was there to cover it. We covered it here on Cairo Radio. Our news partners over at King 5 covered it. Every local newspaper covered it. Reporters were down there. Producers were down there. Some folks were in helicopters covering it. Some of us were just making phone calls to cover it. But it was being covered pretty extensively by the local media. And that's understandable given what happened less than 3 months ago. But it was that coverage that really upset Montel Williams. He says it was a problem. In fact, in the Everett Herald today, he wrote a guest commentary. And in it, he basically said, everyone who covered this story needs to apologize. All the local media outlets that covered this story need to apologize to the kids of Pilchuck. He writes in his piece, I understand that a bomb threat at a school, much less this school, needs to be reported. I do not think, however, that the need to inform the public justifies further frightening these kids by flooding the area with live news trucks and flying helicopters over the location where frightened children are being reunited with their families. It's great that the media constantly professes to care about kids like these, but that is certainly not the message that gets translated to the kids when the media oversteps like this. All that's needed here is a deep breath and some basic empathy for what these kids have gone through and are going through. Here's an example of how King 5 covered the bomb threat yesterday.
Just imagine inside those classrooms, they heard the same alarm that they heard back on October 24th when there was an active shooter inside the school. We talked to some students and parents about how tense and how frustrated they were that this happened to them.
It stirs up memories. I mean, it hasn't even been 3 months yet. And you see kids have been coming crying down, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, just let us heal.
You have to always look over our shoulders. Drama's happening. People are saying stuff, and it's like we don't even know what to believe anymore.
Again, no police are just leaving the scene now. They swept the school with dogs. They say there is no bomb.
Okay, so that coverage from King 5 seemed tasteful to me. It seemed appropriate to me. They spoke to folks who were there. The first voice you heard was a parent. The second was a student. They clearly weren't coerced into going on with King 5. They willingly decided to talk to these folks. So they clearly, at least those two people, didn't have an issue with talking to the media. But that was King 5. Let's see how Q13 covered it.
It's tough for everybody right now. It's bringing back old memories.
I mean, everybody was scared. I mean, obviously, because nobody really knows what's going on.
Police were called, and administrators sent a recorded message to parents.
Out of an abundance of caution, we've evacuated staff and students.
For many of the students, it was all too reminiscent of that day, October 24th of last year, when Jalen Freiberg shot 5 students in the cafeteria, killing 4 before taking his own life.
I know people are tweeting how it's bringing back memories of the first incident at our school. So I know it's rough for everybody, but I think this is going to kind of unify us a little bit more now.
So again, the content was fine. I mean, you can take issue with the way it's presented in that over-the-top voice by the reporter. Here in the citizen, like, it's just a weird tone. You know, push that aside for a second. The content was actually quite appropriate. I thought it treated this issue with respect. But you know what? Maybe Montel Williams has a point. Maybe he does. Maybe, you know, the media went too far to cover the story, and they did a little bit too much in trying to find out how these kids were feeling, and maybe they weren't sensitive. I don't know. I'm going to leave that up to you to decide. And I can understand why someone would come down on either side of that particular issue. But what got me interested in this particular story by Montel Williams is that it was a perspective that it was coming from Montel Williams. He writes that what happened yesterday with the media coverage was, he quotes it as, objectively exploitative. And that really, that resonated with me a little bit, or at least a red flag went up. It seemed a little odd. Because when you think about the person who just wrote that, when you think about the person who just called all this media coverage objectively exploitative, you realize that this guy, Montel Williams, has made a career of doing that to other people, including kids. He once devoted almost an entire show to interviewing a 16-year-old who claimed to have been impregnated, kidnapped, and then enslaved when she was only 11 years old.
Pushed himself on me, grabbed my hand and saying that he wanted to be with me and that he just wanted to be friends with me.
And at the time, did your mother didn't notice this, didn't know anything about him being attracted to you, and your mom felt comfortable because he was acting relatively respectful in front of you and her, right?
Yeah.
He never let on to your mother that he was attracted to you.
No.
Does she sound comfortable sharing this story? She was 16 at the time, was a kid. The mother was in the audience. But this girl, Dana, she was up on stage alone with Montel, answering rather specific questions having to do with the topics of sex and rape. One might say he did that because the story was compelling and might get him some ratings. That seems awfully exploitative to me. And what bothers me even more, despite me thinking he actually cares, because I actually think he does care, I find him to be genuine in this article that he wrote. But what bothers me is this holier-than-thou attitude with his critique of the media. Because in an email that Montel wrote to this show, he spoke out specifically against King, he spoke out specifically against Como, and he implied that they only covered the story the way that they did for ratings. In fact, in this email that he wrote to us, he asked that King and Como say this to the kids. He actually wrote out an apology that he thinks these media companies should send to these kids in Pilchuck. Quote, "We let you down. We scared some of you. We frustrated even more of you. And we realized that the cameras, the helicopters, were one more reminder of 1024 when you need it at least. Worst of all, the message some of you got is you are only worth ratings to us." Because Montel Williams, over his many years in the industry, didn't do things just for ratings. Like that time he featured a racist white man who found himself impregnating a black woman.
Wait a minute. You have a biracial child with a man who is a racist.
Yes.
So how did you even conceive a child?
Yes. That's my question.
My question is, how is that considered nothing but exploitative for the pure desire for ratings? There's no news value to that. A racist guy sleeping with a black woman. There's nothing newsy about that. That is a story that is controversial and put out there simply for ratings. If you think for a second that this isn't even a little bit about Montel Williams and his own exploiting the story that's happening in order to push his own brand, then I think you're naive. Now, again, I actually get the sense he's sincere, that he cares about this issue and he cares about these kids. But even in the guest commentary in the Herald, he writes this: "Having spent some time with these kids, as I have after nearly every incident like this across the country," he points that out because he wants the credit. He didn't have to tell us that he spends time with kids who experience this all across the country. The only reason to point that out is to brag about how good of a person he is, which helps his brand. When you donate to charity, for example, most of you don't go out there and tell the world, you don't put out a press release, "I donated $30 to Treehouse." No, you just do it, and you do it because it's the right thing to do, and you don't necessarily need to score points with the community. The hypocrisy of all this bothers me, even if his message is on point. But I'd love to hear from you. MyNorthwest.com, click on the Linwood Honda inbox, search for the name Jason Rance, let us know your thoughts. When we come back, some residents in Western Washington are upset with nighttime construction. Should they just get over it, or do they have a really good point? We're going to get to that in 4 minutes on the Jason Rance Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Some downtown Seattle apartment tenants, they are complaining that they can't get any sleep. Why can't they get any sleep? Construction is happening next door, and it's happening all throughout the night, and they are ticked off about it. King 5, our news partner, spoke to some residents.
It's frustrating and annoying.
At 2nd and Pine,
it's like this wow, wow, wow.
Some are sick of the construction noise.
It's like, oh my God.
Crews are excavating for a 40-story apartment tower across the street. It's not that people are doing the work. It's when.
They choose to start at 10:30 at night and go till 5 in the morning.
I get like 3 hours of sleep or 4 hours of sleep.
Because of traffic, trucks can only haul downtown from 9 in the morning until 2:30 in the afternoon. So the Department of Planning and Development gave Turner Construction a variance to haul dirt away from 8 p.m. until 5:30 a.m.
The amount of dirt we need to take out of the hole has us running 20 dump trucks in rotation for an 8-hour shift. If we tried to do that during the day, it would be significantly less.
The project manager says this will speed things up and keep trucks from idling.
Everybody's looking for new and different ways to do things to make them easier and faster, to reduce the impact on our community and helping us all be better neighbors to everyone around us.
We took the concern to the city. And the permit liaison promised us tonight the department will conduct a noise measurement to verify they're in compliance with the 60 decibel limit.
There are reasons that we have noise ordinances.
Residents are still writing a list of complaints to take to the mayor's office, hoping the sleepless nights stop.
So I totally get that. Look, I totally, totally understand that, because the fact is, whenever you're trying to get to sleep, whenever you're just trying to like read a book, maybe at 10:30 at night before going to sleep, and all of a sudden you hear this, you're like, I can't, no, stop, I'm just trying to sleep. It's incredibly, incredibly annoying. But here's the thing to keep in mind, because we're always talking about perspective, right? I mean, the perspective of all of these stories is so important. Seriously, I'm doing a radio show. There we go. They finally listen. I totally get it. But here's the context. Here's something to understand. It's temporary, right? It is temporary. This is not going to happen for a very long time. It is going to happen for quite the opposite, a very short time. Because them doing this work in the middle of the night, early in the morning, it means they're able to get it done a little bit faster. And when it gets done a little bit faster, it means you're going to have to deal with a little less traffic right outside of that apartment that you currently live in. It means there's going to be less traffic for the other people who have to drive through that area during the day. It is for the greater good. Now, it would be different if this was long term. If this is something that you're dealing with constantly, every single day, for weeks until it becomes months and then suddenly becomes years, that's different. We're talking about a very short amount of time, and I think we can deal with it for just a little bit. Now, I understand that it's easier said than actually done, right? I understand that. Well, actually, I understand a little bit better than you do, than the average person. I can completely feel for these people, because I live right now in an apartment that across the street, they're building another complex. They're not doing it every single night, all night, but they're starting really, really, really early sometimes. And yeah, I don't like it. I don't like getting woken up to by the jackhammering and the trucks. I don't like it. But you know what? I understand that it's short-lived. It's going to happen. I will compensate by going to bed a little bit earlier or sleeping in a little bit later than I normally would. I will find a way around it. And then, of course, I remember this one instance in which I went to New York City not too long ago. And I hate New York. Oh, God, I hate New York. But I was there, and it's so weird, because if you think about what these folks are experiencing – compared to what people experience legitimately every single day, as I was in my hotel room, I opened the window and I took out my phone, and I've got this little app on my phone that allows me to record all that I hear. It's a normal recorder. I put the phone on the windowsill and I just let it record. And this is what I heard, and I took this at, I believe it was either 12:30 a.m. or 1 a.m. It was in the middle of the night. This is what I heard. Oh my God. This is what I was listening to all night I didn't do anything to this audio. I didn't make it louder. I didn't add sound effects of sirens and jacket. This is exactly what was happening.
Sounds like a vibrant metropolis.
It was awful. And I remember, like, how do you people live like this? And I was talking to people who live in New York City, who live in this area. I'm like, is that normal? There was an air horn. Look at... It's like, is this... It's still going. Is this normal? And they're like, yeah, this is loud. And so, you know, sometimes when you're told, hey, things are much worse. You know, the comment is, you know, there are kids in Africa who are starving, and you're complaining about this cheese sandwich you got. Well, all of a sudden you start to think, well, okay, you know, that's a valid point. There's someone who is less fortunate than me. Consider the fact that every single person in New York City is less fortunate than you living here in Western Washington. Literally every single person. Because they have to deal with that. They have to deal with that all night long. Oh my God, I'm getting a headache. It's Jason Rancho. When we come back, State Senator Steve O'Bannon is going to join us to talk about a new bill he's trying to pass that would give the mentally ill more access to treatment and services. But of course, the question is, how are we going to pay for that? We're going to get into it at the bottom of the hour. Back to the Jason Rant Show. Mental health treatment is a very big topic on the show, as I think it's something that is too often completely ignored nationally. Locally, with any luck, that's about to change. Today, Republican State Senator Steve O'Bannon of Pierce County introduced a bill called Joel's Law, and it's aimed at giving family members of the mentally ill some more power in helping get their loved ones treatment. State Senator O'Bannon joins me now. State Senator, specifically, what does this bill propose?
Well, what I found is that there have been a number of parents over the years who have struggled to get their children, some of them adults, the kind of mental health care that they need. These are young people often who have profound mental illness. And to get the treatment they need to be voluntarily detained. To do that, however, in our state, you have to first go through the sole gatekeeper of our mental health care system, and that's the DMHP, the Designated Mental Health Care Professional. And we found that in some cases, more than we should, that those health care professionals have denied access to those parents when they're clearly their children have needed that critical mental health care. And so we have this bill would basically create a safety valve. It would allow parents who've been denied access through the DMHP to go around to a court and have the court take a look at the case and make an independent decision and hopefully detain somebody who needs treatment.
Why might someone who is living with mental illness be denied care? What is the reason behind that?
Well, there's a test that has to be satisfied, and you have to show that you're in imminent danger to yourself or others, and that's a judgment call case mm-hmm. by case. And what we found is that, you know, parents, they know their children and their histories far better than anyone, and often the DMHP, the mental health care professional, can't possibly know that history to the degree that the parents do. And so a denial decision is made on inadequate information, and when the parents have had an opportunity to present that information to others, in this case it would be the court, so it's not the parents deciding, it's a judge, I'm sure we're going to find that these children will be admitted into the healthcare system and get the treatment they need.
The bill is called Joel's Law. So who is Joel?
So Joel was the son of Doug and Nancy Reuter. Joel was a very high-functioning young man. He had a very promising career in the IT industry. He'd gotten his degree in Arizona. He had been under care, mental health care in Arizona, and had received adequate treatment and got his degree and got a very fine job in the Seattle area, came here. He, as often happens, stopped taking his meds, and his parents knew that. They could tell that Joel was in profound need of mental health care. And so they contacted the mental health care professional in his area and could not get that professional to admit Joel. He deteriorated because he didn't get the treatment in a timely fashion, and ultimately Joel took his life by police officer. He had a gun, and he threatened police. It was pretty clear that he was doing that as a suicide gesture, and he was killed. And had he gotten the medical treatment he got in Arizona and he needed in Seattle, we think he probably would still be with us.
So we can say that we want to give these folks better mental health treatment. But the question, of course, is always, do we have the resources? Now, in King County alone, the psychiatric treatment facilities, they are routinely full. Do we have the beds? Do we have the doctors in this state to be able to adequately address this?
That is a factor. And we think in some cases we worry that DMHPs, the mental health care professionals, may decide not to admit someone that should be because they worry there's not enough capacity, there's not enough beds. So this has been a perennial problem that the legislature started to address in 2013. We started to appropriate more and more money for beds. We did it again last year, and we'll be making an additional big investment, I predict, in mental health care capacity, more beds, more treatment facilities.
Where does that money come from?
Well, it comes from the state. It comes from the general fund, essentially.
So you don't predict like a fight in the state legislature over this?
No, I've sensed. I'm the chair of Human Services and Mental Health Committee, and we work in a very bipartisan fashion. And I think there is general agreement across the aisle in both the House and the Senate and the governor's mansion that we need to increase capacity. We need more beds. We need more treatment. The tension always is other, you know, demands on the same resources, mm-hmm. and education spending is obviously going to be a big issue. But even though we know we need to spend more on K-12 education, early learning, I predict that we'll be finding the resources to create more beds and treatment.
I'm talking with State Senator Steve O'Bann of Pierce County, and to your point of this particular committee that you chair, there's bipartisanship, right? The folks on either side of the aisle, they're getting together. They understand some of the issues that are facing specifically people who are living with mental illness in the state. And yet we're still at a point where not enough has been done. And is it the fact that you just have competing issues out there that also need funding? Is that the reason why it seems like we wait until, you know, there are too many there are not enough beds, or there are not enough mental health practitioners out there before we actually tackle the problem?
Perhaps in years past there wasn't it wasn't properly understood that we needed more resources. I don't think that's true anymore, Jason. I think from everything that I've heard over the last couple of years, and certainly this year, everybody understands we need to spend more money in this area. And what apparently happened, this is before it came to the legislature, is during the Great Recession, when trying to balance the budget, there were deep cuts in this area as well as in other areas. And so we all understand now we need to catch up, and we need to increase capacity.
So the context of all this is also with the McCleary decision and the fight over whether or not we're going to fully fund education the way the state Supreme Court wants the legislature to fund it. So what role does that play in all of this? Because again, it seems like that's going to be a really big issue.
That's right. Let me say there are two issues related to education spending. That's the first. It's the Supreme Court in the McCleary decision saying we need to spend more on education. We started that in the 2013-15 budget of an additional $1 billion, and I certainly predict we'll see more along those lines for the following 2 years. But there's also the class size initiative that was barely passed by the voters, mm-hmm. and had no funding source. And if we were to fully fund the class size initiative to reduce class sizes, that would be an additional approximately $2 billion per biennium. So we've got to make some tough choices and fund our education system, but we've got to also fund mental health care.
So what do we give in on? What do we not fund that you think might potentially, you know, be on the chopping block?
Well, the governor's budget, for example, did not actually fully fund the class size initiative. He had additional spending K through third grade to reduce class size, which is something in the legislature we have we also agree with, and we actually had appropriated some funds for that last year. I think there's probably going to be a similar view in the legislature that we simply can't afford to reduce class size in the, you know, fourth through 12th grade area. There just isn't enough funds, and frankly, the evidence is not as strong that that really has the educational outcomes that you have with K through three when you reduce class size.
So what's the prediction? Are you guys going to fully fund education according to the McCleary ruling?
Will.
You will?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we have a constitutional mandate to do so in a court order. So we will do that. Now, you may have already heard that, you know, the economy has picked up a little bit. It's encouraging. And we're already going to have an additional $3 billion based upon current forecasts. And that actually may increase because the forecasts have been actually getting better with each forecast. So we're looking at an additional $3 billion already. And so we have the funds to increase our educational spending and, I think, make a big or larger down payment on mental health.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in making that down payment on mental health. It's one of those issues that is just routinely ignored. And with Joel's Law, it would appear that it's not going to be ignored any longer, at least not in the state of Washington. I've been talking with Republican State Senator Steve O'Bann. Senator, I appreciate you stopping by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We are back in 4 minutes.
Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, streaming on every device through the Cairo Radio app, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and online at CairoRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. In a case of hard-hitting journalism on HLN, Nancy Grace. Oh, good old Nancy Grace. She spoke to rapper 2 Chainz, who for some reason agreed to go on the show. I have no idea why. And he came on to talk about his support for the legalization of marijuana, even after Nancy Grace did a story about a toddler dying in a house fire that the stone parents didn't realize was happening at the time. And it was just, it's one of the instances in which Nancy Grace can exploit a death of a child to parents who were smoking as a means to pretend that that's happening every single day. So she had 2 Chainz on, and this is how it went.
2 Chainz, first of all, thank you.
By the way, we got to do something. You can't call him 2 Chainz. What's his real
name?
What's his real name? His name is like Steve or something.
I don't remember.
Steve, and then you ask
2 Chainz.
2 Chainz? No, oh, shut up. 2 Chainz, sir, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for being with us. You're a star. So many people, so many teens, so many young adults look up to you. Can I ask you, when you hear about cases like this, why do you still support the legalization of marijuana?
Okay, so obviously it's an incredibly dumb question, right? I mean, we have instances in which people drive drunk and it leads to death. And she's not on the air every single night saying, how could you support the legalization of alcohol? She, of course, doesn't take that because she is jumping on the anti-marijuana bandwagon purely because she thinks it's going to get her some ratings from the older demographic that watches HLN, all 17 of them. So 2 Chainz. Oh, God. Find out his real name. I'm not calling him 2 Chainz again. He responded thusly.
Well, from the stories that I just heard you talk about, they had alcohol included, which we all know, you know, cause you to black out, forget things, and have memory loss. They also dealt with irresponsible people. I don't think that you could put an umbrella on the whole community off these few incidents that you just named.
Well, what community is that? The potheads?
The smokers, the stoners community.
The potheads.
I just feel like you can't use these particular stories
to
define everybody
daddy,
that has recreational use.
I'm not defining everybody, okay? So don't throw me in that pot and stew me.
Don't throw me in that pot and stew me? What is that? I don't even understand what that means. So she goes on, frankly, just to ramble. Listen to this.
And you, with so many people looking up to you, pot. And I don't get it. I mean, I've seen video of you smoking a big fat doobie. I mean, I've read your lyrics. I know what you say in your songs. But when you hear stories like the mom and the dad on the front porch, the baby dies in a fire.
This is legitimately like she is a parody of a dummy on television.
It sounds like an SNL skit.
It really does.
Doesn't it?
Is this? Did you punk me?
I wish.
Is this a legitimate thing?
No, this really happened.
Just think about the logic of that. So every single time someone dies from a drunk driving incident, she's not up there talking about how could you still be up there and support the legalization of drinking, of alcohol? How could you do that? And the reason she doesn't do that is because logically that doesn't make any sense. Because simply one thing happening as a result of someone's bad decision, stupid decision, illegal decision, doesn't mean that everyone acts like that, that all of a sudden we should be stopping our interest in pursuing the main or maintaining the legalization of alcohol. It's just silly. It's just illogical. It's where you go when you can't make a reasoned and logical, you know, argument against something. You go to these huge, like, oh God, Nancy Grace. So eventually she gets to an actual question. And then 2 Chainz, who we found out his name is Tahid. Tahid went on saying, it comes down to being a good parent and not letting kids be harmed by marijuana.
I just feel like, you know, everybody should basically take care of their own. You have kids too as well, right?
I do.
So it's about governing your own household. It's about taking care of your own property. It's about having some kind of structure in anything.
I hear you.
Why are you yelling?
But what I'm saying to you is this. People listen to you. And while you may be able to get high and your children are kept away from that and they're not growing up like that is my guess, is my hope, other people don't have the advantages that you have.
So because there are bad parents who might do bad things with things that are legal, we should make those legal things illegal. So again, let's go to the alcohol. We should make those alcohol. Any alcoholic beverage should be illegal in Nancy Grace's world. We shouldn't have knives in a home because a kid might accidentally get one of the steak knives that's secured away and they might hurt themselves. We got to get rid of that. We're already on the, at least in Seattle, we ban plastic bags, which is good. But maybe we should do that nationally because not forget the environmental impact, but a kid might get a plastic bag and end up suffocating. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. And I just realized why she's yelling. Her audience members are so old. She has to speak really loudly and slowly. I understand. She's putting me in a giving mood. Be caller number 9 right now at 1-888-973-KIRO. That's 888-973-5476. Caller number 9 right now wins 2 VIP tickets for a special screening of Mordecai, a very funny comedy starring Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Ewan McGregor. The event is on Thursday, January 22nd at Seattle's AMC Pacific Place Theater. It's going to be a blast, and you get VIP tickets. Call number 9, 888-973-KIRO, or if I was Nancy Grace, 888-973-KIRO. It's the Jason Rance Show.